has those stories from their childhood that are equal parts things that happened and things that didn't happen. And the way that, to a child, sometimes those things get all mixed up. This is one of mine. It is a story about grief and the way children process death. But it is also a story of magic and an imaginary friend who lives on a mountain. And most importantly, it is a story about the stories our families tell about themselves. This is the story of Grandpa Ship. "Wanna see some naked ladies?" my uncle asked, leaning down and smirking conspiratorially. I could see tobacco leaves stuck to the bottoms of his lower teeth. We were sitting in my granny's living room. There was me, my older cousin Dolly, and my uncle Mort, who wasn't actually my uncle, but a great uncle once removed, or something. I was never very clear on that part, but to us, he was always Uncle Mort. I pulled at the black suit my mother had insisted I wear to the church today. It didn't keep me warm when we were in the drafty old church, but somehow it made me sweat like I'd been mowing the yard in the middle of summer. Back home, fall is still pretty warm, but where Granny lived, it was much colder. I didn't think that was very fair. Every time I pulled at the jacket to take it off, my mother would come around the corner and aim a spatula or rolling pin or something and hiss that I needed to look right. My younger brother had had the good sense to wander off hours earlier. I was wrapped up in an afghan I'd only ever seen used as decoration, but since the adults weren't around, and I wasn't used to what my great aunt referred to as real fall, I'd stolen the blanket from my great-grandfather's unused recliner and wrapped up in it. Most of the adults were off in another part of the house doing a kind of dance, whose steps involved one person crying, one person screaming, one person cleaning, and one person trying desperately to shove food in any open mouth they could find. These roles seemed to change partners every half hour or so. Right now, my father was on food duty, and my mother was on crying duty. I'm pretty sure Aunt Martha was on screaming duty, but it could easily have been one of the other relatives. They were all outside arguing over the garden, blaming one another for letting it go to shit, an argument I don't think I was supposed to hear. My Uncle Mort, however, was on a very special duty that didn't seem to get passed to the other adults. Entertaining the kids. "Well?" Uncle Mort asked, leaning in closer and adding a series of waggling eyebrows to his tobacco-filled smirk. Dolly looked up from her book.
"Gross, Uncle Mort. He's just a kid."
"I'm not,"
I said defensively, coming out of my afghan cocoon just enough to show off my very offended expression. Dolly had turned 16 this year, and ever since she'd been allowed to drive, she'd decided that I was a kid, and no longer worth her time. 11, almost 12, is not a kid. My brother was a kid. 8 years old is a kid, but 11, almost 12, is practically a teenager. We were practically the same age. Uncle Mort gave her a look that seemed to say, "You are no longer any fun since you started driving," or so I interpreted it. Dolly's furrowed brow broke into an expression of disgust, and with an airy gagging sound, she slunk off to another part of the house, though not before providing a parting jab.
"Granny wouldn't like those kind of jokes."
The mention of Granny seemed to summon something up in the room that hadn't been there previously. A heaviness that existed in other parts of the house,
mostly the parts where the adults who were taking turns being shouty and hungry. Uncle Mort, not usually deterred by much, seemed to stall for a moment before turning back to me and leaning much closer than he had before.
"So, sport, you want to see some naked ladies?"
he asked again. Moments later, I'd folded the afghan as neatly as I could and put it back on Great-Granddad's empty rocking chair, hoping its temporary absence wouldn't somehow be noticed by one of the other adults, or, at the very least, linked back to me. Of course, even if it weren't, I didn't put it past Dolly to snitch on me these days. I followed Uncle Mort through the living room and dining room, which were technically one room, though they weren't when it came time to eat dinner, no matter how many times Dad took his on the couch. Mom said dinner was in the dining room, which was the side of the living room with the table. Grandma would simply give him a tray and tell him not to spill on the good furniture, and Mom would tell her to stop enabling bad behavior, and then someone would ask whose turn it was to say grace, and somehow, it was always mine. We walked down the hall, past the den, which was another special living room in the back of Granny's house, where we were allowed to eat on the couch and watch all the television shows we couldn't watch at our house because we only had an antenna, but she had cable. Uncle Mort was chatting the whole time, an endless series of disconnected stories about when he was younger and how he'd once lost a bet with a mermaid, and when my dad was younger and how he'd bought him his first beer, and when my great-great-great-grandmother was younger and how she'd been a queen. "Nobody listens to Uncle Mort," I'd heard my mother say after he'd told me a story on our last trip to Granny's house that had resulted in me asking her why Uncle Mort thought I needed to meet a nice woman with big knockers.
"Where are y'all heading off to?"
My grandmother's voice stopped us as we were just about to make for the back door. I hadn't heard the adults come back inside.
"We're gonna see some naked ladies,"
I shrieked proudly, at a volume that is only reached by small children saying inappropriate things at inappropriate times in inappropriate settings. Grandma stopped drying the dish in her hand and narrowed her eyes at Uncle Mort. I could hear Aunt Martha and my mother through the open passageway, though since their voices were similar, I was having a hard time figuring out which one was taking turns at crying and which was cooking. Grandma seemed to have taken over cleaning, which meant that someone else somewhere was very likely angry at someone, and I felt glad I was not in whatever part of the house where that was happening.
"I told him not to be gross. He's a little kid, and that kind of language is for us adults."
Dolly's head had popped around the kitchen entrance and hovered next to Grandma's. "Dolores Jane, you're about as much an adult as a grasshopper is an eagle. Now go set the table for supper." Dolly rolled her eyes and disappeared back through the kitchen. When she was gone, Grandma turned back to the two of us.
"Well, I guess it's okay, but please don't go getting too dirty. Mama's pastor's coming by to join us for supper, and there's nothing here for him to change into that'll fit. Unless we take something off of one of Martha's old dolls, and nobody wants that."
"Oh, we won't be long,"
Uncle Mort said, clapping me around the shoulders with a force that implied he'd forgotten I was a few feet shorter than him. He was a tall, thin old man, but his hands were so strong. I rubbed at the spot.
"Almost forgot," Grandma said, waving the dishcloth at me. "Where's your brother? I haven't seen him all day."
"He said he was going to play with a friend up the hill,"
I replied. The hill is what the adults called the giant mountain that extended up from the back edge of Granny's property and went off into forever. Everywhere you looked around here was mountains, but all the adults just called them hills. Grandma rolled her eyes.
"A friend? That's sweet he made a friend up here where y'all are staying. Must be one of the neighbor's kids, though I don't remember anyone having kids his age. Mort, can you fetch him too? Lord tellin' how dirty that boy's gonna be."
"Yes, ma'am, Bertie," he replied. I considered myself very mature for my age, but even I thought it was weird that nobody else addressed Grandma as Grandma. It was a title, like Your Royal Highness or Pope or something. That's who she was, and always had been. It felt a tiny bit disrespectful that nobody else saw it that way.
Naked ladies, Grandma said with a tone that mocked Uncle Mort's hoarse tenor. That really is the worst name for those.
Uncle Mort ducked down as we entered a rickety little room where Granny had kept the cat food and an extra freezer and shelves of various mismatched holiday decorations. It didn't match the rest of the house, and during really windy days, I swore it moved. But Mom had told me I was silly for thinking that. In any case, it was the only way to get to the backyard without going out the front door and walking around, or going down through the basement and up the back steps. Granny's house was a puzzle of a place.
You better take all that mess off, Uncle Mort said as his hand touched the doorknob. Don't want your mother screaming her head off that we dirtied your shiny new suit.
Are the naked ladies somewhere dirty? I asked, remembering another joke my father had made a few months back with his friends when he didn't think I could hear him about women in a mud pit. Are they in a mud pit?
Uncle Mort had at first stifled his laugh, but when I asked my second question, he guffawed in a weird, airy laugh that sounded more like a donkey braying than laughter.
Boy, they're either not letting you watch enough television or too much. Now go on over there in that corner and put on them waders. They'll be a little big, but they'll keep your fancy clothes clean.
Piled on top of the deep freeze was a bunch of mismatched little boots and jackets and other things people grabbed quickly when coming and going from Granny's back door. Amid the pile were what looked like overalls that had rubber boots attached to the bottom. I carefully slid off my shiny black slip-on shoes my mother had bought, along with the suit, and laid them on the emptiest space I could find, and tried not to let it touch anything dirty, lest the dirty somehow transferred to the suit. Out we went through the back door and down the steps that wiggled and creaked when you walked up or down them, but that every adult I'd ever asked had always insisted were perfectly safe, though they did so while firmly gripping the flimsy handrail and rushing towards the intended direction. Somehow, the mismatch between their rushing and their words never made me feel safe. Granny's backyard was both very small and very big. It was small in that she had a little garden to the left where she'd always grown a few vegetables, and on the right, she'd had a clothesline where she hung clothes while whistling. It was very big in that there was no back fence except for a little row of flowers. Once you stepped over them, the ground quickly became the foot of the mountain, stretching up and out into a sky filled with trees so close together I'd had to ask if mountains changed color when I was much younger, my brother's age, because it never looked the same way twice. Green, yellow, red, black, depending on the season. Help me whistle up the wind to get these clothes dry before supper, Granny had said to me with a wink a few summers ago when I'd come to stay.
What's that mean? I asked.
Good breeze helps the laundry dry, but sometimes the air needs a little direction, so we gotta tell it where to go.
She wrinkled her face at me in a grin that came up from her chest and held my hand, turning us both to face the shirts and socks and pillowcases all hanging wet and limp on the line.
Like this.
She pursed her lips and gave three quick whistles. They were airy, yet musical, flipping up at the end as though the note was leaping into the sky. I followed suit, or tried. I puckered my lips and sort of spat and sputtered as I tried to imitate her deft tones. Nothing happened. I felt her hand, her skin soft and smooth and a little loose with age, but strong from years of kneading bread and yard work. Where our hands met, I'd sworn there was just the slightest tickle, like when the sprinkler is on in the backyard, and a bit of the mist lands on your skin unexpectedly. Then the wind picked up. Nothing dramatic. The furniture didn't fly away. If I'd been wearing a hat, it wouldn't have abandoned me, but it was enough that all the wet fabric billowed slightly and floated into the breeze.
I tried that trick must have been 1,000 times since then. Usually in the bathroom with my freshly damp towel after drying off since we didn't hang clothes to dry because we had a dryer and weren't mountain folk, my mother had said. It never worked. I assumed Granny had been tricking me. The wind has to come sometime, after all.
All right now, close your eyes,
Uncle Mort insisted, putting his hand over my face before I had a chance to obey.
Are the naked ladies close?
I asked, confused as I didn't see any way I could have missed a whole gaggle of women without their clothes on anywhere near my great-grandmother's backyard. Maybe they were up in the mountain somewhere?
Just close them.
His hand stayed over my eyes as we stepped together farther and farther into the grass. When you can't see where you're going, it starts to feel like your steps are taking you miles away from where you started. And in that moment, that's how it felt. Uncle Mort's hands were also strong, much stronger than Granny's. When they held something, it was always firm. I couldn't see any light peeking through his long, thin fingers that wrapped around my face.
Step, step.
Oh, watch out for the puppy doodle. I instantly cringed and pulled my foot back, almost falling over, but Uncle Mort held me as I found my footing and remembered that Granny hadn't had a dog. Therefore, there could not have been any doodle of any kind. Can we be done now? I asked, much more tired of Uncle Mort's games than I used to be when I was younger.
All right, he replied, coming to a stop.
He made a big show of rolling his shoulders and jostling my body a bit. It made me giggle, which felt undignified, so I forced myself to stop.
Here they are.
Blinking, I opened my eyes as his hands left my face. I looked around, and as the world came into focus, I realized I was the butt of yet another of his jokes. The only thing in front of us was the foot of the mountain, just beyond the end of the backyard.
Uncle Mort, I groaned. There's nothing here.
He laughed a bit and reached his arm around my shoulder to point down. I followed his direction. He was pointing at the row of pale pink flowers that lined the back property of Granny's home.
That's them, Uncle Mort said.
Those are just flowers, Uncle Mort, I chastised, and turned to head straight back into the house and change out of the smelly waiters and back into my nice clean suit.
They're called naked ladies, he replied, his gaze remaining on them.
He reached out a hand and gracefully touched my shoulder, gently coaxing me to turn back around and regard the little pink stars.
Your granny made these. They've been in your family a long, long time. One day, when you get your own house, you'll take some of these and plant them where you live so they can watch over you and your family. They were her favorite thing. Except you, of course.
He said the last part as he tussled my hair. I stood for a moment and looked at the flowers. I was used to blooms that sat on top of stems, but these sort of drooped at the neck like they were bowing their little star-shaped heads, or maybe the flower was too heavy for the stem. Either way, the longer I looked at them, the more they seemed a little sad. And that made me sad. I thought of Granny. How the last time we'd come to visit her, I hadn't been allowed in to see her because she was very sick. But I was promised I'd see her soon when she got to go home. And how, a few weeks later, when my mom got that phone call, and how everyone had been very sad. And how, when I'd seen her yesterday morning at the church, she hadn't at all looked like herself. Because she never looked at you without squinting, and the squinting made little jewels appear in her eyes, and her face couldn't do any of those things. And so she didn't look like herself. I realized I was crying, and I set about immediately drying my eyes with my sleeves because a boy of 11, nearly 12, was too grown up to cry over some flowers. I expected Uncle Mort to say something, but when I looked up at him, his eyes were gazing up into the mountain. The hill.
Hmm, he said quietly. Then, looking down at me, said, Come on now,
Let's go get that brother of yours before he stirs up trouble.
We stepped over the row of flowers, and it was as though mist tickled all over my body, like I was just far enough away from the sprinkler on a summer day. The feeling passed as quickly as it had come, and I thought no more of it.
That wasn't a very nice trick, I said,
for want of something to say as we crunched our way through the leaves and started up the hillside.
Trick? Uncle Mort echoed distantly. Then, realizing I'd said something, replied, You mean them naked ladies? That's what they're called.
Nuh-uh,
I chided, because there was no way on earth that was the real name of a real flower.
Yes, huh?
He replied, moving lower limbs out of the way and making a path up to where my little brother and I used to play together.
Flowers have all sorts of names, and all sorts of stories about how they got those names.
I liked stories. The one thing my family did well was tell stories. Everyone was so good at it. After I'd turned 10, I was allowed to stay up 30 minutes later than my little brother, and it was like a whole new hidden world had opened up to me. I could tuck myself into the corner and listen to my father or my aunts or my grandmother tell all sorts of stories. They were always so much funnier or sillier when they were telling stories than they were at other times. It was like seeing someone without their glasses, a hidden self that doesn't fit how you think they look, but feels more true.
So, what's the story of those flowers?
I asked, certain there wouldn't be one.
Those flowers? He asked, picking me up swiftly and stepping over a rotten log. Snake.
I turned to see there had been a thin, banded snake where I was about to step. Uncle Mort was so strong. We kept moving.
Those flowers. Here, keep hold of my hand. Those flowers have lots of different names, he continued, his voice less boisterous than normal. A belladonna lily. Belladonna means pretty lady. Or amaryllis, or naked lady.
Those are all very silly names, I said.
All names are pretty silly, Uncle Mort said. They're just things someone made up and other folks went with it, because it's easier than thinking up something new.
I considered this for a moment, and then asked,
Do they all have the same story?
We walked for a beat in silence before he answered.
In a way, the name Naked Lady, Naked Lady, is because it blooms real late in the year after all the rest of its leaves die back. So it just stands there, all pink and pretty, without any leaves to cover it up.
Oh, that actually makes sense, I said, thinking that sounded quite sensible once it was explained, though I didn't know why it being a flower made it a lady. But it's still a silly name.
Uncle Mort laughed quietly. He was standing straight and tall. Usually he was off in a corner telling his stories to the aunts and cousins, hunched over and old. I knew he was tall, but he seemed much taller out here, walking next to me. However, the sun was beginning to set, and that made things look different, so I decided it must be shadows and angles and something to do with math I hadn't figured out yet.
What about the other names?
I asked, stepping over a large root that arched itself out of the ground.
Belladonna is because it belongs to a whole family of plants with that name, he responded.
Like cousins and aunts and stuff?
Like cousins and aunts and stuff, sure. And they're all pretty poisonous, so don't go eating them. But if you believe in some of the stories, they're all more or less magical.
Now he had my full attention. Magical? Those flowers can do magic?
Who knows? He said with his big, hoarse laugh. In some stories, belladonna could help you fly. In others, a lady might be able to make herself look real pretty for a time, or you might send bad people away. They're even tied up with the fates. But like I said, it's all stories.
We'd reached the part of the mountain where I'd expected to find my brother. There was a downed tree we called the Skiff, because when we discovered it with my dad years ago, he said it looked like a little boat. We always used to come up here to play pirates, or we did when I was a kid. I didn't do that kind of thing anymore. When he wasn't there, we started calling his name,
and looking around for him. But Uncle Mort didn't let go of my hand.
"Do you think he went back to the house?"
I asked finally.
"Maybe,"
Uncle Mort replied. We were leaning against the roots of the tree, the bow of the skiff, and looking off into the trees around us.
Uncle Mort, where do you think Granny went?
I asked quietly, surprising myself. I immediately wished I could grab the words out of the air. Like, if I reached quickly enough, I could pluck them and stick them in my pocket before they made it to his ears. It was a very silly question. Death had been explained to me by my mom and dad. Granny had gone to sleep, and she wouldn't wake up. But she got to be with everyone who came before us in a good place. I thought all of that was very silly as well, because why wouldn't she just wake up and be with us and make us biscuits and gravy and knit blankets and do all the things we liked to do together? But then Jasmine, a girl at school, had told me that death was about bodies and systems shutting down, and she knew because her dad had died the year before, so she had experience with these things. "She's wherever you are," Uncle Mort said kindly, and he left it at that. And I was grateful. We'd decided to keep looking for my brother, concerned that he might have gotten hurt or lost. So we went farther up the mountain. The sky turned from blue to gold to pink as the sun started to go down. Uncle Mort started telling me more family stories, like how my mother had been a very good swimmer when she was younger, and how that kind of thing ran in the family as far back as he'd ever known. It was funny, because the way he talked sometimes, it sounded like as far back as he'd ever known was a very, very long time ago. Shadows started doing funny things with angles and math again. Some of them looked like people, and some of them looked like other things, with eyes and teeth. Uncle Mort held my hand firmly, though, so I was never scared. Eventually, one of the shadows ahead that looked like a person was a person.
"Now, boy, you about scared me half to death, and that ain't no easy thing to do,"
Mort howled as my little brother came wandering into view.
"Hey, Uncle Mort,"
my little brother said, hopping forward playfully. He was filthy. Clearly, he'd found every puddle of mud and rotten log on the mountain and rolled around in all of them.
"What were you doing all the way up here? Your mother's gonna tan your hide when she sees the state of them clothes."
"I was hanging out with Grandpa Ship. We went all over the mountain and he showed me..."
"Who?"
Uncle Mort interrupted.
"Someone up here with you?"
My little brother turned around as though looking for someone he very much expected to be standing behind him. Confused, he turned back to us.
Grandpa Ship, he said, as though that was all the explanation we were going to get.
"We don't have a Grandpa Ship," I said.
"Yes, we do. He took me out on the skiff, and then we went up the mountain, and..."
"We don't. You don't have a Grandpa Ship," I said, trying to shape the words so that they felt pointed. Uncle Mort, who had been staring into the distance behind my brother without blinking, relented and coaxed us both to calm down.
"Let's just get you boys back home before we all get eaten up."
All the way down the mountain, my little brother, hand firmly in Uncle Mort so he wouldn't wander off again, regaled us with stories about Grandpa Ship. He had sheep. He knew all sorts of plants. He could lift boulders, except nobody around here had any kind of farm with animals on it, definitely not sheep. And as far as I had ever seen, there weren't any boulders on the mountain either. Not even any very large rocks. Just a few big trees. Every time I asked a new question about this supposed grandfather of ours, he had an answer. Uncle Mort, for his part, simply listened as I asked, and he answered, sometimes chuckling, but mostly looking out for the path ahead as the light was getting dim.
"If he's our grandfather, then one of our parents would be his child," I said as we neared the bottom of the mountain.
feeling very satisfied with myself. So which is it? Is he mom's dad or dad's dad? There was no answer. I could see from the side of his face, visible in the dim light, that he was considering the question deeply. Finally, he replied,
I forgot.
I felt very satisfied with myself, as I took this non-answer as confirmation that I had been right all along, which was secretly my very favorite thing in the world. I didn't often get to be right around Dolly anymore, because she was in high school, and in high school you learn about biology, and chemistry, and history, and some very hard math called physics, and you even get to perform surgery on dead animals like frogs and cats. So you knew pretty much everything a person needed to know. And I never got to be right with Mom or Dad or Grandma or Aunt Martha or even Uncle Mort, because they had already been to high school and had known everything for many years. But I knew more than my little brother, and that sometimes meant I got to be right.
He has to mean Daddy, right? Grandma asked. It was a few hours later, after dinner, but before bedtime, and everyone had crowded into the den. My little brother had told the adults and Dolly all about Grandpa Ship, and after his insistence that he was real, everyone had begun a kind of guessing game trying to figure out on which family member he'd based this new imaginary friend. They had immediately ruled out his teachers, as the only male teacher he'd had was in preschool, and that man had been very young and worn painted nails and did not fit any of the descriptions my brother gave. Nor could it have been a neighbor, as none of our neighbors back home were old, except for Mrs. Latham, who sat out on the porch and smoked cigarettes and painted watercolors.
How could he remember Granddad? Mom replied. He was only, what, 2 or 3 when he died? There's no way.
Kids remember more than we think, Dad said. There was a story just a few weeks ago on the radio where they did studies about children and memory. Since the way our brain remembers is similar to how the imagination works, those memories could get expressed through things like imaginary friends. That's why false memories are such an issue, because our brains can tell us stories about ourselves that didn't happen. But the truth is in there somewhere and can get brought back up after a major event.
Like a death? Aunt Martha offered, and the room went a bit quiet and sad.
Mom looked over at Dad with a sly expression and then made her fingers mimic eyeglasses that she held to her face. Then she said in a funny professorial voice,
A child's brain has 50 million neurons, and each neuron holds exactly 3.2 memories, and did you know that there are entire sections of the brain dedicated to remembering how to poop?
Everyone laughed. The momentary sadness broke as quickly as it had come.
What do you think, Mort? Grandma asked, still chuckling a bit to herself.
Gotta be Daddy, right?
Uncle Mort was in his usual position, hunched over in an overstuffed chair covered in quilts that was tucked in the corner next to the built-in space heater. He'd been quiet during most of the conversation, which wasn't unusual for him. He only really came alive when he was telling one of his stories. He had his scruffy chin in his right hand and was looking at my brother in the center of the room. He seemed to take a moment to consider the question, then leaned in. The rest of the family also leaned in, ready to hear his thoughts. Then he said in his low, hoarse voice,
I ever tell y'all about how I had a little thing going on with a sexy little nymph who lived down by the river?
Mort! Grandma shrieked as Aunt Martha shoved him playfully in the shoulder. Uncle Mort winced at the spot and made a big show of looking pained.
My war wound! My war wound! He shouted as though he were in a cartoon.
You weren't in any war, Dolly hissed, rolling her eyes. Slowly, the family disbanded. We were all staying in Granny's house to help clean it and get it ready to sell, except for Aunt Martha, who lived around the block.
Uncle Mort slept in Granny's old room, since it was the only empty one, and he said he didn't mind. Everyone else had rooms upstairs, but I slept in the den, on the pull-out couch, because I was old enough to have my own bed. After my nightly bath and getting tucked in by my parents, Uncle Mort looked in on his way to Granny's room.
"Hey, sport," he said. "Need anything? I'm just down the hall."
"I think I'll be okay," I replied. Then, as he turned to go, I thought again and asked, "Uncle Mort?"
"Hmm?"
"What was the other story?"
"Other story?"
"Yeah, you told me about how one name for Granny's flowers is because of the dead leaves it has, and one is because of its family, but what was the other one? The Mummyrillis?"
"Amaryllis," he said slowly.
Uncle Mort came in and sat down on the corner of the pull-out mattress, folding one of his long, bony legs up in front of him.
"That story is sad."
I pulled myself up onto the back of the couch, ready to listen. Saying nothing, I waited until he continued. As he began to tell the story, his low, hoarse voice became clear and deep.
"A long time ago, there was a mermaid, a child of the Sea King. She loved to swim close to shore on sunny days. One day, she saw a young man, a shepherd, and she fell in love instantly. She waved to him, and he, resting on a rock, gazing at the flowers on the hillside, waved back. She used her magic to walk on land and introduce herself to him. But the young man wasn't interested in her. He had seen mermaids before, and he didn't think one more was anything special. The mermaid was sad, but determined to win his favor. So she asked what he would find special. He told her he wanted to see something beautiful that nobody else had ever seen. The mermaid went back to her home in the castle of the Sea King and thought long and hard, but couldn't think of anything that matched what the young shepherd might want. She could raid her father's treasure chamber for lost jewels or pearls the size of your fist, but if he hadn't thought a mermaid was special, surely he wouldn't think jewels were either. She asked her sisters, but none of their suggestions seemed to fit. One recommended drowning him, but that was her answer to everything. Eventually, the mermaid decided to ask a fortune teller, who gave her an arrow that had once belonged to the trickster god of love, and told her to prick herself just over her heart. She would have to do it every night from one full moon to another, but on that final night, she would have her answer. The mermaid did as she was told. She took the arrow and used her magic to walk on land and crept to the home of the shepherd and, while gazing at him through his window, pierced her skin. Since she was a child of the Sea King, her blood had magic in it, and it sparkled in the moonlight as it dripped to the earth below. Being a goddess, even a minor one, her wound healed immediately, but left a tiny scar that glowed with moonlight. This was the way she spent her days. When the sun was high, she went to the shepherd as he tended his flock, who turned her away, becoming crueler each time. He would call her ugly and drab, but she trusted in the magic and wanted desperately to be loved by him. On the final night, when she held the arrow to her scarred chest, she looked at him through the window and drove the arrow so deep it pierced her heart. Her magical blood came out in a small river, pooling at the same spot as all the nights before. But this time, out of the ground, sprouted a flower. It was long and pale and pink as her immortal skin, and lacked any leaves that would hide its beauty. The mermaid was overjoyed, because she finally had something beautiful that nobody else had ever seen. The next day, she met the shepherd on the hillside, and offered him the flower. He said that even though she was still plain and ugly, that this flower was beautiful, and offered to marry her now that she had proven herself worthy of him. However, the mermaid paused and realized she was a goddess, a child of the Sea King. And it was he, the shepherd who should have been working to win her favor. Being rebuked by the mermaid inspired obsession in the shepherd, who begged her to be with him. But his actions spoke louder than any promise of love. Angry at being made a fool, she went to her sisters for help, but they laughed and said, "This is what she got for falling in love with a mortal." She went to her father, who was furious at how she had scarred her immortal flesh for a simple shepherd. Finally, she went to her uncle, the king of the underworld, who told her that he could help her, but it would cost a bit of her immortality. He decreed that the shepherd would never be allowed entry into the underworld unless he came bearing the mermaid's flower. While her sisters remained forever young, eventually she began to show signs of age, and so the mermaid left her father's castle and used her magic to walk on land, where she made a new family and could tend her garden and keep watch over her flowers.
I sat staring wide-eyed, with my mouth hanging loosely apart, lost in the story. Uncle Mort's stories were usually shushed by the other adults and mostly involved descriptions of women he had known over the years or jokes that made my parents groan. I never fully understood the jokes, but I knew I was not supposed to be hearing them, and that made me love them, and love all the more when he got to the punchline. This story wasn't like anything he'd ever told me before. While he told it, his back had straightened up, and he looked long and tall and imposing, like he had on the mountain where shadows did funny things with angles. But there were no shadows here. The moment he finished, however, he sunk back down into his usual hunched old self. "Is that true?" I asked, yawning, my eyes suddenly heavy with sleep.
"Oh, I don't know," he replied, his voice back to its usual hoarse twang. "It's your granny's story. She's the one told it to me. I'm sure I left a few bits out, but that's how I remember it. Now you go on and get some sleep."
He leaned over and patted my head, then rose to find his way to his borrowed bedroom. The following morning at breakfast, the adults had all decided to do away with their game of one of us be sad while one of us be angry, and instead announced we would all begin cleaning out the house, starting with the basement. We would be going back to our home in a few days, and there was a lot of work to do in a very short amount of time. Since my little brother was very young, he was allowed to go outside and play so he wouldn't be in the way. Before he left, he filled one of Granddad's old metal lunchboxes with leftovers from breakfast, announcing he was taking it to share with Grandpa Ship. This got mostly chuckles from the adults, who all joined in to tell him to have fun with his imaginary grandfather and to be careful about going too far from the house. Once he'd left, Dolly made a joke that at least he wasn't going to an imaginary strip club, which made my dad laugh, but everyone else shot Uncle Mort a look and said he was on time out from telling us kids any more stories, as he was clearly a bad influence. Dolly saved him by saying she'd seen something about it in a movie, and then Aunt Martha took her out of the room to ask what kind of kid she'd been hanging around at school. We sorted through old pictures and games that were missing some of their pieces, and Granddad's giant train set that took up a whole corner of the basement. Dolly and I were assigned to go through a closet that didn't have any proper walls except for dirt. The tiny room had shelves lined with jars, some of them filled with preserved vegetables and soups, while many others were empty or broken. They were too heavy for trash bags, so we had to carry them in our arms up the back steps and around the house to the trash can. Dad saved a few jars of pickles and all of the jars of apple butter, insisting that they'd never have a chance to go bad. After a while, Aunt Martha, whose head had been buried in a box of papers, looked up and asked, "Mama, you know where Granny's birth certificate might be? I found that box of documents we were looking for, but I don't see it. There's the deed to the house and all the birth certificates for us kids and a bunch of other things we might need, but not hers." Grandma walked over to her and poked her head into the piles Aunt Martha had made. "Lord knows," Grandma said. "Mama might not even have one. Back when she was a girl, the family was so poor they might have just skipped getting one. I don't think she was even born in a hospital." "When was Granny born?" Dad asked, his hands filled with pieces of the train set he was disassembling. "Well, now let me think," Grandma said. "Gosh, had to have been 1912, 1915, somewhere around then. I know she grew up a bit before the Great Depression, which is why she had to save absolutely everything." "What's funny?" Aunt Martha said, gazing at an old photo in her hand with a kind of glassy expression. "I swear, one time she told me as a girl that she and her family came over here during the potato famine." "This family and our stories," Grandma laughed. "There's just no way that could be true. Maybe her grandma told her about when they came over, and she twisted the story a bit when she told you. But all that happened, what, 18-something? Early to mid-1800s, Dad finished for her. "Who knows? Maybe she was 200 years old. We can go tell the kid's pediatrician that they've got good genes." Everyone laughed at this and went back to work. Later, when we went upstairs, we found Uncle Mort quietly hunched over in his chair in the den, looking out at the backyard and up into the mountain. That night, my brother told us that Grandpa's ship had taken him to his home by the ocean and said he was lonely, because Granny's family never came to visit. The next day, we had to clean out all the closets. Dolly couldn't stay the whole day because she had swim practice, and even though Aunt Martha didn't want her to go, she did anyways. It was a little colder outside, so Mom dressed my little brother up in one of the thicker fleeces she found in one of the upstairs closets. She rolled the sleeves up so much they looked like giant donuts at the end of his arms, and the bottom of the fleece went past his knees. I helped Uncle Mort clean out Granny's closet, since nobody wanted to help him. I only cried twice, and left the room each time so nobody would make fun of me, since I was 11, almost 12, and too old to cry. Dad was angry that night when my little brother came home shivering, because he said he'd given his fleece to Grandpa Ship, because he was very cold out on the mountain. He said Grandpa Ship liked getting gifts, but hadn't gotten one in a long time. "That's it," Dad said. "No more Grandpa Ship. You don't have another grandfather. You need to grow up and stop this imagining. You could have caught your death out there." My little brother had cried, and Mom scolded Dad for being too harsh, though after my brother went upstairs to sleep in the little bed made up in the room he shared with our parents, my mother said she agreed with my father and thanked him for saying something. Grandma took up some chocolate chip cookies later, which I didn't think was fair because I had cried today too and would have liked cookies. But since nobody had seen me, and I was supposed to be too old to cry, I didn't say anything. The third day, I was sent outside to play with my little brother, to make sure he didn't wander off again. We were to stay in the backyard, behind the line of flowers, and not go running off up the mountain. When we went outside, we found the missing fleece laying in one of the flower beds. Dad said my brother needed to quit making up stories, but Mom said it was because Granny was watching over us and didn't want him to be cold. Everyone else was cleaning out the kitchen and deciding what furniture would go to which relative, and what furniture would get donated to the church for charity. My little brother and I tried to play pirates, but it didn't have the same fun it did when I was a child, and eventually we fell into silence as he quietly played off near the row of flowers, and I sat next to the basement door waiting to be called for supper. Hours passed, and eventually, Dolly came around to tell me that the adults wanted me back inside to take her place, clearing out the kitchen cabinets, because she had swim practice. I looked back at my brother to make sure he was staying put, and found that he'd picked one of the long, pink flowers, and was using it as a sword. A few minutes later, I was pulling out mixing bowls from the lower cabinet, next to the oven, when Aunt Martha came in, asking why Dolly wasn't in here working. She balled up one hand into a fist and slapped her thigh with the other. "I specifically told that girl no more swim practice while we're on bereavement. There's too much to do." She left the kitchen quickly and tore off into the house. I guessed to find her phone or her keys so she could go get Dolly. I smiled a bit, thinking of Dolly getting into trouble, but then caught myself and stopped. Seconds later, Dad popped his head in from the hall. "If you're in here, who's out there watching your brother?" he asked, though the way he said it sounded less like a question and more like a pointed statement. I started to respond, but Mom came in and cut me off. "Andrew, he's gone," she said. "He must have gone back up into that danged hill again." Dad turned to me and said, "Go bring him back, and don't think we're done talking about this. You disobeyed us, and now your brother's gone." I started to respond that this was unfair. Dolly had been the one who disobeyed. My little brother disobeyed. I had done what I was told. I was formulating a very intelligent argument when Uncle Mort came into the kitchen, tall and troubled and imposing. He'd already put on boots and a thick black coat. "I'll go with him," Uncle Mort said. "We'll be up and back real quick. Don't worry, they'll still be in one piece for you to chew out later." Uncle Mort waited as I changed into the waders above the deep freeze and put on a thick rain jacket I had found in one of the closets the day before. The moment we were outside, Uncle Mort took my hand and we practically leapt down the rickety stairs through the stretch of backyard and over the row of flowers that marked the property line. His long legs pounded through the fallen leaves and dodged low limbs and root systems that rippled out from the ground as though they'd grown themselves specifically to trip people in the woods. We were climbing the mountain faster than I'd ever done it, but I somehow didn't struggle to keep up. My steps were keeping up with his, and I wasn't even out of breath. "Uncle Mort?" I asked, mostly to break the silence, as too much silence between people made me uncomfortable, especially when they were holding hands and climbing a mountain. "Hmm?" he grunted in response, keeping his eyes trained forward and up the mountain. "Do you think he's in trouble?" "No," he said simply. "But I think he might have stirred some up." I didn't know how to respond to that, so I fell quiet as we climbed further and faster up through the mountainside. In what felt like less than a minute, we were in the small clearing with the downed tree that my little brother and I called the skiff. We found him standing there. He was holding a flower in his hand, the flower he'd taken from Granny's backyard and used as a pirate sword earlier that day. He was pointing it at a man whose hand was reaching out to take the stem.
"Stop!" Uncle Mort yelled as we stepped closer.
His voice was deep and clear and booming, and when he spoke, it was as though all the sounds in the woods on the side of the mountain stopped as well. There were no birds chirping in the distance, or the sounds of animals crunching unseen through the leaves. Everything was still. Everything was quiet. I looked up at Uncle Mort, who still held my hand and was shocked at what I saw. It was Uncle Mort, but his face looked much younger. He looked like he was Dad's age. His hair was thick and black and curled long down the sides of his face. His jacket also did not look like the same old barn coat it had been, but a cloak that was fastened with something silver near his neck that could have been a coin or a skull. I couldn't tell what. I did not know what was going on, but now did not seem like an appropriate time to ask questions. So I looked back at the man standing next to my little brother. The man was tall, but not as tall as Uncle Mort. He looked older than Aunt Martha, but younger than Grandma. He had short brown hair, peppered with gray and a tight beard to match. He looked big enough that I believed, if he'd wanted to, he could have lifted the skiff right up over his head. He leaned down to my brother and asked,
"Who do we have here?"
"That's my little brother," my brother responded, pointing. "And that's Uncle Mort."
"Uncle Mort,"
the man echoed, stretching out the word uncle. "Who is that?" I asked, surprising myself. The question hadn't been directed at anyone, but my brother answered. "It's Grandpa Ship," he said excitedly. The man laughed hollowly.
"He keeps saying that," he said,
not breaking eye contact with Uncle Mort. "I told him I was your granny's first love, and then he heard shepherd and kept saying ship, and the whole thing just spun off from there." Kids.
"Must be your accent. You're not from around these parts,"
Uncle Mort said. He was stern. Nothing like the dirty joke-slinging uncle I'd always known.
"You should go back where you came from, Alteo. This mountain isn't your home."
"Oh, come on now, Mort,"
the man said, spitting out my uncle's name. His hand was resting on the trunk of the skiff, but when he said Uncle Mort's name, his fingers flexed in frustration and the entire tree split right down the middle. He took a breath and calmed himself and continued.
"When I heard Amma was ill, I had to come see for myself. You can't be mad at me. I've loved her for a long, long time, you know. Kept near her all these years, hoping she'd see sense and change her mind and come home with me. And now she's gone, and I can't even be with her in death because you stuck me like this all over a stupid flower."
"What you have is not love. It is obsession. It is madness, and despite what you might call it, you harmed a member of my family,"
Uncle Mort replied.
"I do not take that lightly. And if you do not leave, you will see the fullness of my displeasure."
"No," the man replied calmly, stepping forward and resting his hand on my little brother's shoulder. I looked from the broken tree and back to the man, feeling Uncle Mort's grip tightening.
"No, I don't think you will. You can keep me from dying, that's for sure. That's yours to say, but in all my years on this earth, I haven't ever heard tell that you can harm the living. And that's what I am, living forever in agony because I can't have her, and now you won't let me die."
The quiet of the mountainside made me uncomfortable, and whatever was happening here made it worse. I tried looking at Uncle Mort again, but it made my head hurt. He was at once my old Uncle Mort, a man who was at least as old as Granny had been, and had been in my family as long as anyone could remember, wearing his barn coat. But also, he was this younger man, tall and fearsome, with a long cloak clasped in silver. I looked away.
"Tell you what," the man said. All I want is the flower, freely given to me by one of Amma's bloodline. If you won't let me have that, I'll take the kid. He's funny. He can keep me company.
That is not a gift that is his to give,
Uncle Mort replied, then seemed to consider the offer and asked,
So what if I let you die? Then what? You would still stand in judgment, and for this and many other crimes, you would be sent to Tartarus to remain there for all of eternity. You are a wicked man, Alteo. You will not harm the boy or defy my rules. He is my family too. He will come back with me.
The man's fingers tightened ever so slightly in their position on my little brother's shoulder. He flinched and began to cry. I felt safe holding Uncle Mort's hand, but that sense of safety was waning with the concern for what the big man might do if he became too angry. Would he really take my brother? Would he try to hurt us? I wanted to cry too, but I reminded myself that I'm practically a teenager and should face this like a man.
Your family, the man spat back. Does your kind really have family?
He does, said a voice. Everyone turned. Emerging from the woods behind us was Granny. Or it should have been Granny. It was Granny in that it looked like Granny, all stooped and old like I remembered her. But at the same time, she looked like a beautiful young woman with long curly hair and freckles across her face. I did not understand what was happening, but I was so overjoyed at seeing her that I wrenched free from Uncle Mort's hand and ran towards her to fling my arms around her waist, which was soft and warm, but also slender and small. She knelt down next to me and put my face in her hands. Hello, my precious little boy, she said. I've missed you. Granny, I whispered in response, unable to keep the tears out of my eyes a moment longer. No crying, she said. Can you be brave for me a moment longer? I nodded, and she stood and took my hand and walked me back to Uncle Mort. Uncle, she said, and put my hand in his. The man said.
What are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be dead, finally?
I am wherever my family is, said Granny. Now, let go of the boy. Your anger is with me. The man's jaw clenched as his eyes darted from Granny to Uncle Mort and back.
This isn't right, he screamed. You're family can't keep me like this. I'm getting what I came for, one way or another.
He reached down to scoop my little brother up in his arms, but Granny, who looked suddenly young and glowed with a cool green light, a light I had seen in a documentary at school about little algae that live in water and do something called bioluminescence when you touch them, leapt forward. In a blink, she was holding my brother, cradling him like he was a baby, even though at 8 years old he was too big to carry. She walked back towards us, holding him, and looked up into Uncle Mort's face. That's enough, she said. It's been long enough. I'm not here anymore. He shouldn't be either.
Are you sure?
Uncle Mort replied, his voice tender, while his expression remained grave and stony.
He does not deserve your mercy. Not after this.
True, said Granny,
turning to look back at the man now standing alone next to the skiff. But he's just a man, and men can be wicked or kind or nothing special at all. But in the end, they all come to your domain. It was me who should have been punished for being foolish enough to want him so much I would stab my own heart. It's been time enough. We should both be at peace.
As you wish,
replied Uncle Mort. I looked back at the man who had a moment ago looked young and strong, big enough to throw a dead tree. And instead, he was old, unbelievably old. Years wrapped themselves around him in the form of lines and wrinkles and spots and graying hair and a stooped spine, each second blanketing him more with age.
Take the boys. I will meet you at the bottom.
We each took one of Granny's hands, her appearance settling back into the short, soft old woman I knew her to be. The three of us turned back in the direction of her house and began walking slowly down the mountain. Uncle Mort, still tall and young, stepped towards the old man that my brother had called Grandpa Ship, his cloak billowing behind him. He met him, and they both began walking in the opposite direction. And as they did so, it was as though the darkness of the woods beyond became even darker, opened up even wider into a great archway through which was an enormous room filled with an endless number of people, and beyond them were three benches that judges might sit at, except they too were enormous. Their size so incomprehensible to me that I blinked trying to focus my eyes, and when I did so, it was all gone. The archway, the people, the benches, the old man, and my Uncle Mort. But Granny was still there. She was old and familiar and warm, though still softly glowing in that gentle green light. All the way down the mountain, she asked us questions and told us jokes. She asked about school and scolded my brother about his grades, but praised him for deciding he wanted to be a zookeeper when he grew up. She told him it would be a perfect fit for him, since he'd always loved animals. As for me, she asked about my stories and whether I'd come up with any new ones. I told her we'd been assigned a mystery project at school, and I was still thinking up a good twist. She told me she knew whatever I came up with, it would be great. She also told me to be nicer to my little brother, as one day it would just be us until we had children of our own, that being right wasn't as important as being kind. I wanted to ask her so many questions about her and Uncle Mort and the man called Grandpa Ship, but also Alteo and who we were, but none of it seemed important right now, because for a few minutes I had Granny back, and I just wanted to stay in this moment forever. After a while, as the sun was beginning to set, we came to the base of the mountain. I looked up to ask Granny if she could come inside and have supper with us, only to realize I was holding Uncle Mort's hand. He was old again and stooped, and wearing his dirty old black barn coat. Uncle Mort, I asked as we stepped over the row of naked lady flowers that were also called amaryllis, feeling a slight tingle as though stepping through the edge of the sprinkler mist on a hot summer's day. Where's Granny?
Ah, sport, he replied, letting our hands go now that we were in the backyard.
He knelt down and looked at me. I searched his face, looking for the other Uncle Mort, but not finding him.
She's gone. She's no longer with us. Do you understand?
But I thought she was always with us, my little brother asked. Uncle Mort sighed.
In a way, he said, in a way, the people we love are always with us as long as we remember them.
We walked up the rickety stairs and put our jackets and boots on top of the deep freeze in the little room that had been added on at the back of Granny's house, and walked into the kitchen. Grandma looked up from the stove where she was finishing supper. "Took you a while," she said, keeping her hand stirring what smelled like chili. Then, looking at my brother,
"Boy, your mother's gonna tan your hide coming in all dirty like that. Better go get changed and leave your dirty clothes in my room so I can wash them up so she'll never know."
My brother smiled and began to leave the kitchen.
"Oh, wait," Grandma said, stopping him. "How was Grandpa's ship today? What'd y'all get into?"
"He left," my brother replied.
"He left?" echoed Grandma boisterously, cocking her eyebrow. "Ain't like family to leave. He gave a reason?"
My brother shrugged his shoulders in response, thinking of what to say. "Uncle Mort sent him home." With that, he left to change into clean clothes before our parents could see his dirty ones and get mad at him for being messy. Grandma's face screwed up in confusion, and she wheeled around to us.
"What's that all about? What'd you do?"
she asked, angling her head down and peering at us in mock interrogation. Uncle Mort laughed and held his hands up in mock arrest.
"Bertie, your guess is as good as mine."
I pulled my car into the driveway of my new house. After decades traveling for work, I'd finally decided to settle down and buy a place where I didn't have to worry whether the landlord would find out I'd gotten a dog. Not that I'd ever had one of those either. My furniture was nice enough so the empty house wouldn't be empty for long. It was the yard that needed the most work. The grass was patchy and riddled with weeds. However, there was a nice walkway extending from the street to the front door with a pair of trees on either side of it. I looked at them for a little while and got an idea.
"Hey, little brother," I said over the phone when he picked up.
"How are the kids?"
"You know, I could probably bench press you, right?" he replied with a laugh. "I think you might be the little one these days. The girls are fine. How's the new place? You move in yet?"
"Just got here, actually. Moving crew's supposed to be here later today. Carter's behind me with the baby, but they're not far."
"Look at you, family man. Never thought I'd see the day."
"Yeah, well, had to grow up sometime, right?"
"Hey, question for you. You know those flowers Mom and Dad gave you, the ones everyone has from Granny's? You have any bulbs you could spare? I think I'd like to plant a few in my new front yard now that I probably won't be moving for a while."
"Oh, man, sorry, no. When we moved a few years back, we forgot to dig them up. That old house is half a state away, and I don't even know the new owners. Why don't you ask Dolly? I bet she has loads."
"Yeah, I will," I said, trying to think of the last time I'd spoken to my cousin. Hearing her name and thinking of the flowers made me curious.
"Remember that fall?
When Granny died?"
"Yeah," he said simply. "That was a rough one."
"It was," I agreed, but then smiled and asked,
"Remember your imaginary grandfather?"
"My what?"
"Your imaginary grandfather, Grandpa Skip or Ship or something you called him. I remember when we were there for the funeral, you were gone all day, and when you came back at night, you would tell us you were playing with your grandfather up the hill."
"What is with this family and our little stories? That never happened. I remember Aunt Martha tried to take me to the daycare at the church that first day, but after that, I'd walk down to the park a few blocks away every day while y'all cleaned. I didn't have to lift a finger."
"But," I said, trailing off, "don't you remember losing that fleece and getting lost up the hill and we had to go find you?"
"The only thing that was lost in those woods was your sense," he laughed. "You were always getting lost up there, and Dad or someone would go out looking and find you reading all those little fantasy books of yours, losing track of time."
That wasn't how I remembered it. There was something about a tree. I knew we used to play pirates around it, but when I tried to focus my memory, all the little trips we'd made sort of ran together in a haze.
"You know,
If Dolly doesn't have the flowers, maybe I could just swing by Granny's old place next time I go visit Aunt Martha, I said. Wonder who's living there now.
In Granny's house?
Yeah.
It's Mort, my brother said, his voice a bit confused. You didn't know?
I realized I'd been stunned into silence and said, I hadn't even realized he was still alive. I thought he died before Grandma did, and that's been a few years back now.
Yeah, no, but he's still there, according to what Dolly told me. They go check on him every now and then. He doesn't leave the house much anymore, and they have a service come around and keep the place clean. But he's there, from what I know.
But I thought he was Granny's brother or something, wasn't he? He was older than her, right? How is he still around?
I thought the same thing, but nope. I'm not actually sure how he's related to us. He's just family. And he's still there, probably slinging dirty jokes through the window to any kid that walks by.
We both laughed at the idea. A part of me wondering if he was still asking people if they wanted to see the naked ladies in his backyard. My brother and I ended the call with promises to get our kids together at the first opportunity, which were becoming fewer and far between as the years went on. As I slid the phone in my pocket, my husband pulled into the driveway next to me with a full car and our new sleeping son. We looked at the house quietly for a while, imagining all the new stories we'd tell inside. Thank you for listening to Grandpa Ship, a short story by Don Martin. If you like this story, please tell your friends about the podcast Head on Fire, or consider picking up one of his books wherever books are sold.